Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and it's always an exciting Monday when I have a chance to talk to all kinds of great designers. So today we have Lindsay Wilkes on first, and she is from the Cottage Mama site. And I've actually been following Lindsay's work for a while. I don't know how I got there originally, but I love seeing what she's doing because she talks about not only her children's clothing that she designs, but quilting and cooking and tips and tricks for all kinds of fun stuff. And so she has a new book, and that is just so exciting. So I am really happy to have Lindsay here. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is so exciting. I first want you to tell me how you got hooked on creating children's clothing.
Well, I started sewing for my daughter right before she was born. You know, I wanted to start sewing some things for her. So that's actually when I got into sewing. And then once she was born, I just started making little clothes for her. And, you know, it's just so fun to dress a little baby girl. So I started designing some clothing out of home deck fabric. I'm not sure why I was doing that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know.
Babies
I thought that
in
was
home
maybe
deck.
Yeah, well, I kind of love some of the prints in home deck, and I hadn't been exposed to quilting cotton yet. So one time when we were in Taos, New Mexico, we happened upon this fabulous little quilt shop down there, and I laid my eyes on Amy Butler for the first time, and I was completely hooked and bought several of her prints to make my daughter's first birthday dress. And that's kind of how it all started. And now I just absolutely love it.
Is it hard to design clothing? I mean, I've made clothing, but I've never designed it.
Well, I think children's clothing is definitely easier than adult clothing because their body shapes are more straight. You know, with women, you have to consider all different shapes and sizes and curves and I mean, we do see with today's child, they are a little bit, they do come in different shapes and sizes. But for the most part, you know, it's a pretty straight shape. So I'd say it's probably the most easy form of clothing design.
Ah, so tell me a little bit about the look, because you have a flair for mixing fabrics. I just love the way you put things together.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, that's kind of one of my favorite parts of the design process is picking out the fabric. So for me, fabric scale is really important, especially on a child's garment. You know, it's not a very large piece that we're creating. So I try to make sure that I choose one large or medium scale print, and then the rest of the prints are either medium to small. So it doesn't look like one big overwhelming garment. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's really important to remember that a child's body is small. And so the surface that you're covering, you might have this glorious large print, but it might be like a big bullseye, you know, on their rear end, which you might not want, you know, if you don't be careful.
Exactly. And putting too many large scales together can just look like kind of a mess. You know, so it's important just to pick up that one print that you really love and then draw colors out of that larger scale print for your accent prints of fabric.
Ah, very, very good. So now you actually have a few tutorials on your site, which is thecottagemama.com. What kind of things do you have there that people could just take a look at?
I've got all kinds of different little patterns. One of my favorite is this little ruffle bonnet that I have that I actually made for my second daughter's first birthday, Matilda Jane. So that's a great little pattern. I've got a free party dress pattern that comes in size 12 months up to size 4. And that was a dress that I actually created as a flower girl dress, but it's perfect for the holidays, and that's completely free on the blog. And just all kinds of things, you know, even adult accessories. I've got a fun infinity scarf on there.
Oh,
I've got
good.
a boxy dop kit for men, you know, just all kinds of things.
Now you actually work in, going back to that drapery fabric that that you liked way back. You work in fabrics other than cotton. What do you like to mix in with your cottons?
I'm really liking velveteen lately. That's kind of a fun one for fall and winter for coats. And corduroy is fun. I also like to use lawn, cotton lawn. Yeah, just some different textures are kind of fun to bring in with the cotton, even doing felted wool and mixing that in with different fabrics just for a little extra texture.
Do you have like a little tip for corduroy? I've not worked with corduroy in forever, so it might be actually nicer than when I used it back in the day. Is there anything special that we need to know if we work with corduroy?
No, and not specifically. I mean, it's the quality of corduroy has probably come a long way. So it's pretty much just, maybe changing out your sewing machine needle. It is a little bit thicker, so it's more like working with a denim or something. So making sure you have a needle that can accommodate a thicker fabric. But for the most part, it's pretty easy.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So let's talk about your book. Your book.
Yay!
It's so cute. So classic clothes for girls. 20 dresses, outfits, and accessories. So, tell me what actually is in it. What kind of dresses and accessories?
Well, there's 17 garment patterns, and there are three accessories in the book, and it comes in size 12-month up to size 10, so it's a pretty good range of sizes. We've got two coat patterns in there, the one on the cover, and then a shorter version. I've got party dresses, I've got smock tops, frocks, pants, capris, shorts. Pretty much anything you would need to create a handmade wardrobe for a little girl for an entire year.
So
Yeah,
that,
so that's
I
kind of.
love that concept. So everything, so they could have, you have everything in there that you could sew a whole bunch of outfits.
Yes, and if you just bring in maybe a few pairs of leggings and some, store-bought t-shirts that you can embellish, I mean, you really can create all the pieces that, the little lady would need. And I love the classic look. Sometimes I think we, dress our little girls like mini adults a little too soon, and they're only little for so long. So this gives you a good opportunity to make some classic garments for them.
I actually want the coat on the cover for me.
I kind of want it too.
Yeah, I want that fabric. I want the lining. I want everything. That is just so cute. Are these your children in the book?
Yeah, both of my girls are in the book.
Oh,
The
how
child
fun.
on the cover is not mine, but yeah, they think it's pretty neat to open it and see themselves in there. One of my girls said, "So that's gonna be in a real store?" So they think that's neat.
How old are they now, your children?
Savannah is 5, Matilda is 4, and then I have a little boy, Caspian, who's 2.
Oh, the whole troop there.
So,
You have a whole you'll be doing boys'
yeah.
books next. Yeah, that's
I know, right? So, yeah, they're pretty little, but they love the sewing. My older daughter keeps begging for her first sewing machine, so I said she needs to be 6.
Yeah, there you have set some
Yeah,
guidelines
right.
there, right? So tell me, you have a product that you use that I'm not real familiar with, which is called wash away tape. How do you use it? What's it for? Tell me about it.
Okay, well, this is Wash Away Wonder Tape is my favorite product, and I'm not a paid spokesperson for them at all, even though I kind of wish I was. But it's just a fantastic product that I use almost daily in my sewing. So it's a see-through, double-sided sticky tape, and you can sew through it, and it won't gum up your needle. So I use it for whenever I'm inserting piping in a garment, I use my Wonder Tape. Whenever I am layering trims for maybe I'm going to do a rickrack underneath a woven ribbon and add that to a garment, I'll use the tape to hold it in place just because I feel like it's more accurate than pins can kind of make things wonky. And it's also great if you are serging and maybe you have a pattern that you want to make sure that it lines up, such as stripes. If you were doing a striped knit, you could use Wonder Tape to make sure that your stripes line up perfectly as they're fed through the serger.
Ooh,
So it's
that
great.
it
It's for
sound
all kinds.
yeah. And it washes away, you said? I forget what you said. It washes
Yes, it
away?
washes away. So
Okay.
you have to make sure that you get washed away Wonder Tape because there's lots of
Okay.
different tape products on the market, but this one won't gum up the needle and it'll disappear.
Well,
So
it
I
sounds
love
like
it.
you're,
I love it. I mean,
yeah.
I think I have 5 rolls of it in my sewing room right now.
I think I'm going to have to try because I think even for quilting, you could put it under binding or just little, particular things you're trying to do that are tedious, maybe in like the lining up part. That was a great tip. Super
Yeah,
tip.
or maybe even holding like an applique in place. You know, you could stick some of that on behind it. And maybe that, I don't know. Maybe that would work. And sometimes you can use some for holding your buttons in place. If you want to sew on a button but with your machine, you can just put a little piece of tape behind the button and that'll kind of hold it so it doesn't budge on you.
That is a really good idea. I've never really done buttons on the machine, but I know a lot of people do. So that would be really great for keeping it just tacked in the spot. So, yeah.
Right.
Now, is your book actually available now, Lindsay? Is it in the stores?
I actually just got the first shipment this last Friday, so it is shipping. I know several distributors have gotten it, so I don't think it's actually hit the shelves of Joann's and all the big box stores yet, but I've received mine, and so I know it is going out to
Great.
everybody now. Yeah, it's
Perfect.
very
Well, thank you
exciting.
for being here. This has been so much fun.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Visit Lindsay at thecottagemama.com. We'll be right back after this break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show today is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. And you can go out and visit them at unitednotions.com or modabakeshop.com, where you can find all kinds of free patterns. They have glorious stuff, such great things. So be sure you go and visit them. Now, on my bookshelf, I have a book by Marcia McCloskey. And I bet if you look on your bookshelf, you have one or two or more of her books as well. She has been writing books since her first one called Small Quilts, and there are, I think, over 30 books with her name on it. She's a fabric designer. She's invented several products to make our lives easier, and I am over the moon to have Marcia come and join me for a nice long chat here today. So hi, Marcia, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. Thank you so much for having me on.
This is so exciting. Do people say that to you all the time?
I'm glad it is.
Yes, yes, yes. So tell me, now let's just sort of get a little bit of a backstory, because I actually don't know how you started quilting. You know, how did that happen for you? What was your first quilt sighting or making?
Quilt sighting. Well, I always sewed as a kid. I'm sure that a lot of people started out with doll clothes, and I did too. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Christmas presents was a little red toy sewing machine that did a chain stitch. And so I was sewing from the time I was about seven. Mm-hmm. And my high school graduation present was actually a Singer sewing machine. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever saw a quilt was when my neighbor, Grace, was making utility quilts. And I'd never seen one made. It never occurred to me that there was a whole world of quilts out there. Mm-hmm. And so I just used her cardboard template, and it was a triangle. I used her template, and I made a design that was all scraps called Broken Dishes.
Okay.
That was my first quilt. I was copying her, and I made it for my daughter, Amanda, the year she was one. So that was in 1969. And I pieced on the sewing machine. I quilted on the sewing machine. I even put the binding on the sewing machine. And it was, you know, it never occurred to me that anybody would do that by hand.
Right. Because you only saw it on the machine. Yeah, so
right.
Then you worked on a machine, so that just makes sense, doesn't it?
It does, only I was told later that it wasn't a real quilt. Because it wasn't done by hand.
Those quilt police, they just have been around too long, Marcia, haven't they?
I think so. But, you know, the guidance is sometimes useful.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever piece by hand? Did you ever learn that?
I didn't really. My hand skills are not good. I tried, but it was just so slow.
It is slow. It's painfully slow. Now, you actually have an art degree. You know, do you feel like that helped you when you started making quilts, you know, more for a living, for your business?
Well, I don't have the degree. I was studying art, and then got married and had kids, and I think it does help to have some background on the fine arts side, but it all gets integrated one way or the other.
It does. I think, you know, whatever your like first experiences are, they just sort of come around sometimes. Do you see that? You know, what you loved to begin with, you know, you get influenced over time with everything that you're doing.
Right. The I became fascinated by all the different piece designs very early. One of my favorite references is Barbara Brackman's Encyclopedia of Piece Patterns. Mm-hmm. Because there are thousands of configurations of triangles and squares and other shapes, and turns out I'm kind of a drafting nerd in that I love the drafting part.
And you know, you know, I think that that's really interesting, because you do make quilts that are not you know, some of your, not all your quilts, you know, Marcia, but some of your quilts are not for the timid. You know, you have some really spectacular piecing, and you have to be confident, don't you think, to sort of step up to some of your feather stars?
Well, you get to a point in your quilt making where you're ready for more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, I got tired of doing the easy stuff. I felt like I'd done that, and if I and I wanted a challenge, and I was looking for the hardest block I could find. And there was a mariner's compass, and that was too much. I didn't want to do that. And then there was appliqué, and I don't do appliqué, but that feathered star was really interesting. I saw my first one. You know how you can see a pattern, but it doesn't register? The first time the feathered star really registered with me was at a quilt exhibit in Houston in the early 80s. And Carrie Bresnahan had mounted a show of red and green quilts. The whole
room,
it was breathtaking. And
I know. Just thinking about it gives me chills. It's like, can you imagine? It must have been gorgeous.
It was. And one of the quilts had a little sign next to it that said the name of the quilt was Feathered Star. And it was a block that I stood there and sketched it because I wanted to make it. And we didn't have digital cameras or phones that would take pictures. And if you wanted to capture a design, you had to draw it. So I did. And I went home and I looked for the pattern. Well, this is early 80s. And in the, at that time, it was possible to own all of the quilt books. And I did.
That cracks me up. It was possible. It really was.
Yes. Everything that came out, you could buy. I found the pattern in one of my quilt books, and it was called The Radiant Feathered Star. And I couldn't find a pattern for it. I saw a picture of the block. And what I found out, that feathered stars are not, it's not just one block. It's a category, and there are like hundreds of variations. And I was just off and running. I've been having a great time ever since. Making that all the different stars.
Are the different stars? Did you ever think that you would still be intrigued this amount of time with the same block?
No, I didn't think so. It's been a very good thing to be known for a specific design. I do get tired of it every once in a while, and I go do something else. But then I come back. Because they're just beautiful, beautiful blocks.
And because you found it, you know, you sort of, they're not all, you're not making the exact same block over and over. So you've found all these different variations and you've created your own variations. So that's what I think is really fascinating, Marcia, is that you've been able to expand it out and show people the possibility of taking one block and doing, you know, so much with it. When did you write your first book on feathered stars? Do you remember?
I think the first one was a little pattern for a feathered star sampler. It was red and white, and that Patchwork Place was the publisher. And it came out in 1985. In 1987, again, with that Patchwork Place, I published a book called Feathered Star Quilts. And it was the book I wanted to read when I first became interested in the design.
Oh.
I think that, you want certain information. And if it's not there, you go find it and put it together. I think if a quilter can have a dissertation, mm-hmm. That was mine. It took about 5 years of research and learning to draft the blocks and design mm-hmm. the quilts before I could put it into a book. And, of course, that book is way out of print now. Mm-hmm. But you can still find it on Amazon. Amazon is wonderful.
You probably have to pay $800 for it, Marcia, on there if you
find one. Not quite.
Not quite, okay.
I do tell people not to recycle it. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Don't put it there. Yeah, be sure you put it on Amazon. Somebody will want it.
Right.
That is so funny. Okay, so I have one more question, then we're going to take a break. Do you own any antique feathered stars?
I have two or three. Mm-hmm. One was the cover quilt on feathered star quilts from about 1890 to 1910, right in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple, not very many. I have a little storage problem with quilts. I have so many now that, well, you give them away, you put them on the beds,
yeah.
you put them on the walls, and still yeah. there are piles. So
I totally get that. I have the same storage problem. I think I'm right in the middle right now of documenting like 600 of my quilts, and it's just craziness. Yeah.
600?
I know. They're not all bed size. They're, you know, a lot of small projects. We're going to take a break, Marcia, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am talking with Marcia McCloskey of Feathered Star Production. Go look on your bookshelf and see if you have, how many of her books you have. I know you have at least one. So, Marcia, I wanted to talk a little bit now about some of the tools that you developed to help you do your quilting, because, you know, I'm always fascinated when someone has a great idea and puts it into a tool that makes our lives easier. What was the first tool that you did, and why did you create it?
It kind of goes back to the feathered stars, and I use a process for making the two triangle squares that are the feathers around the mm-hmm. stars. I use a process called bias strip piecing. And it was a process that I developed along with some other people in the 80s. And Nancy Martin from the Patchwork Place designed a ruler called the Bias Square, which I dearly love. I still use it. The 8-inch Bias Square, probably mm-hmm. one of the rulers that I use more than any other. But it's marked in eighths. And there was there comes a time in Feathered Stars when you really need sixteenths.
Mm-hmm.
And so my Feathered Star ruler will do the same things that the bias square ruler will do, but it has measurements in sixteenths, which for people who are doing Feathered Stars or miniature piecing of any kind, small-scale piecing, very often they get into numbers like 1 and 9 sixteenths. And so I designed a ruler that would let me see that clearly with a line on the ruler, and I didn't have to eyeball in between the eighths.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's one of my...
Yeah, people who do that kind of work are loving you, Marcia, because you're right. If you need, yeah, I mean, not, I don't ever go that small personally, but I know that if you need to, most rulers don't really have that kind of a measurement on it.
And when your eyes are getting old, like mine are, you need the line. You need mm-hmm. to be able to see that. And, mm-hmm. So that's one of my rulers. And the other one, are they actually there too, and they're called precision trimmers. And the bias strip piecing is wonderfully accurate for two triangle squares. And essentially what it is you sew the seam first and then you cut your shape.
Mm-hmm.
So you sew the seam in the middle before you cut your square. And I wanted a process that would be just as accurate for four triangle squares, you know, the hourglass mm-hmm. unit or the
okay.
points
mm-hmm.
on a star, that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with a ruler that measures from the center of the square rather than the side, and it's called a precision trimmer. And what you do is you overcut your triangles and make your four triangle square, and then you center this ruler on your sewn unit and trim it down to the perfect size. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yes, yes. And on your website, you also have some pictures on the page which beautifully show what you're describing. So the page that has your ruler. So no, that makes sense. So we're a little oversized so that you know you're going to be accurate, and then you're trimming it down and using very accurate placement marks on your ruler.
Yes. Yes. And it's a wonderful thing for beginners who have been working with squares and are afraid of triangles. Because this gives accurate triangles, and then because they're cutting squares, they're not cutting triangles,
right.
And it is a ruler that a lot of other teachers have picked up,
mm-hmm.
Harriet Hargrave and Laura Nouns, to name a couple, have promoted the rulers in their classes and in their books, so it's not just me. They
well.
Work pretty darn well.
I think that that's great because people always, you know, there are people who love really nice precision work, and it's great to have strong tools to help them do that type of quilt making. I'm curious now, the Feathered Star block, you were saying, you know, there's and you have many, many variations. Do you actually name each variation of the block? Do they all have, you know, not Feathered Star 1 through 800, but
Well, I go first by Brackman. If there is a traditional name for the block, then I would use the name that she gives it in her Encyclopedia of Piece Patterns.
Mm-hmm.
If I design a new block, then I get to name it.
So do you have a favorite
one? A favorite one. Well, the one, my favorite one is a triple feathered star. And of course, that name is not very romantic. It's just descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
But the triple goes from a star in the middle with the feathers finishing at 3/8 of an inch to the, and then it has two more stars outside of that. And that's a challenge. It takes about, took 4 days to piece the block.
Oh, my gosh. And how big was it? How big is the block? Is it like a 12-inch block? Or are they really big?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Yeah. No, this is a big block. Let's see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's what, 28 inches across?
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've made one feathered star quilt. You should be very proud of me. It was like I had no clue how hard it was going to be. And I made it like, you know, like my third quilt or something. It was a feathered star. Yeah. But I made it and I finished it and quilted it.
Well,
so it was pretty good.
Messed out really good about that.
Yeah, yeah. Now I feel even better because I know how hard it was. I still didn't really get it at the time because I was like a baby quilter. So I didn't know. You know, it's like when you don't know, you just, you know, like, well, that was rough, but okay, it's done. That's.
And are you going to do it again?
Well, I don't know. It's been a long time, Marcia. We'll see. We'll think about it. So why don't we talk a little bit about your fabric lines? Because you have absolutely beautiful fabric, and I am actually using your current fabric line. How long have you been designing fabric?
I started in 1996 to design fabric for Clothworks. Mm-hmm. And David Piha asked me to design a line of fabric. He was... let's see. Roberta Horton had a line with him that was all plaids, and he was just getting in the quilting business, and he wanted me to design quilting fabrics. And I told him, David, I have no idea how to do that. And he said, well, go home and figure it out. Yeah, you'll come up with something. And I looked at my fabrics, and I realized at that time that the hardest thing for me to find was good background fabrics.
Oh, okay.
That I would find one every couple years that I really, really liked, and that I'd use it for everything, and then I'd have to look for something else. And so my first line of prints was called Staples, and they were all background fabrics. And I figured I would never be asked to do that again, so if I designed what I wanted and what I needed for my stash, then I'd have it for a very long time. So that was Staples the first time they came out, all background fabrics. There were 110 pieces in the line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's huge.
Huge.
They never let me do that again. But the newest one, the newest line, is called Everything Blue. Mm-hmm. And again, with Clothworks, and there are 26 different pieces, and they're all in this kind of chambray to indigo colorway. And again, it was selfish on my part because I was running out of blues, and I couldn't find the colors I wanted, so Clothworks was very cooperative and said, okay, we'll make blues for you.
Well, I'm actually designing a project for a client that will be a mystery block of the month using your whole line. You know, just this, that, you know, everything blue. And it's just, it's coming together so gorgeous. It was exactly what I had in my head, Marcia, when I started sketching this. I was like, I wanted a blue and cream quilt, and Clothworks sent me some stuff, and I was like, that's it. That's perfect. It's got a great stripe. You have like three shades of it. I just love that.
I love the stripes too, especially the dark one. And one of my favorite things to do with it is a bias binding.
Oh, yeah.
That's to die for.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you have the most gorgeous photo that they sent you of the bolts coming in to the plant to be rolled onto. They're the big tubes to be rolled onto the bolts that you see in the crafts in the quilt shop. And the photo is just gorgeous. I think everybody who loves blue and white will just, you know, be out there looking for it. When does it hit the stores?
It's there now.
Oh, okay.
I It was delivered, let's see, while I was on my trip to the Midwest. So that would have been the middle of last month.
Okay.
So it's been in the stores maybe 2 weeks, 2.5 mm-hmm. weeks. And I do have it on the website.
Perfect. Perfect. It's called Everything Blue from Clothworks, Marcia McCloskey. So, Marcia, do you travel a little bit? You've traveled a lot in your career, but you're traveling a little bit less at the moment, right? Do you have a schedule on your website?
I do. And if people go to my website, they can find me just by typing my name into Google, and mm-hmm. you don't even have to it right, but you'll get to MarciaMcCloskey.com, mm-hmm. and then on the left there are buttons, and right near the top it says Marcia's teaching schedule.
Perfect.
And, so I try to keep it up to date.
Yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. So when one more thing before we're done, is there, like, when you go to a quilt show, when you personally go to a quilt show, what are you drawn to go look at?
I like old quilts. I like traditional quilts. And I love all the colorful modern quilts, and I love the art quilts. I just mm-hmm. think they're wonderful, but what really kind of gets to me and settles me down is a good traditional quilt. Probably with the look of something from the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the antique quilts and old looking quilts too. They just, you know, it's sort of like our history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So, Marcia, this has been super, super exciting. Do you have anything else that's, like, up and coming? We have, like, 30 seconds.
Up and coming, I'm designing a sequel to Everything Blue. And I'm also working on a book of miniature blocks or small-scale piecing. That's my solution to having a quilt storage problem, is to keep making quilts that make them really little so that you don't have to have a place to.
That's perfect. I love it. I love your solution. Thank you for being on, Marcia.
Thank you, Pat. I've enjoyed it.
Please visit Marcia at MarciaMcCloskey.com. We'll be right back after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Well,
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. That was really fun to talk to Marcia. She has just so much information in her about feathered stars. Exciting. So Leah Day is back with me, and Leah and I decided that we wanted to talk about something a little bit different this month. We thought we would talk a bit about blogging and about videos, because both of us do both, and blogging is something that's attainable for each and every one of you if you might want to do it. And so we thought that'd be really fun to talk about. Hi, Leah. Thanks for coming back on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pat.
So I just love this topic, and you came up with it. You were like, let's talk about blogging. I thought, oh, that's really good. So why did you first start to blog? Was it for quilting, or did you actually blog prior to quilting?
I did blog prior to quilting, and I'm not going to mention the blog name because I don't want people to go searching for it. I blogged kind of, it's still there, but I don't want you to know about it.
Right.
It was basically a skincare blog. I had a skincare business before my quilting business, and so really it was blogging to drive traffic to that business, to that website. And it works. I mean, you know, blogging as a vehicle for traffic driving, that's essentially how I use it. I blog to bring in lots of people and lots of eyeballs that watch the videos and enjoy the free content. And then some of those people then turn around and decide that they, you know, want to give back and place an order and buy something from our quilt shop. So, you know, it's kind of a win-win thing. Now, does everyone, you know, do that, like follow through and click through and support us? No, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's a good number of people, and it's certainly a sustainable business, and it's free content, so it doesn't really cost me that much time or money to put it up there. So it works out pretty well as far as the balance.
Now, are you finding that because that, you know, you blog as a business, and I pretty much blog as a business, but, you know, there are lots of bloggers out there, the people who read ours and that we interact with that blog for fun. Are you finding that when you're sharing like this, sharing your work, that people now are saying, oh, you know, I have a blog too, I'm sharing my quilting, and then you're sort of inspiring them?
Oh, absolutely. And I have even link up days where I encourage people to link up on a specific day of the week and share their blog, their free motion quilting. So it's kind of like saying, okay, go blog about free motion quilting, quilt something, you know, so quilt something cool, blog about it on your blog. So that's your voice on your platform, on your place, and do your thing, you know, make it awesome. And then come and link up. So here's my blog, which is established and it's got traffic. And on this day of the week, you can link up with us. And, you know, everyone that comes here will see your link and might click on it and come to you. So it's a way to kind of build more traffic and get, you know, noticed. So I absolutely encourage it. I love it when people get into blogging because I think there's just so much creativity out there and encouraging it, and especially encouraging women to share their stories and put themselves out there and to value what they're doing more than anything else. I think that's so powerful. So often, you know, we're stitchers, we're kind of stitching in the back room, whatever, in front of the TV or whatever, and we don't value what we're doing. We don't see it as anything special. When you start putting it out there and sharing it with everyone and you start getting compliments about it, I mean, that changed my life. Just people saying, hey, gosh, you're so good at this, you know. I mean, it really did make a big difference for me, and I think it's a big deal for anyone. I really encourage everyone to form a blog. If anything else, it helps you keep track of when you made things. You know, I don't remember when I made them. It's just nice to look back at the blog posts, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to blog every day. You don't even have to blog every week. It's a great way to share your work, to make new friends. I think that's what's so important. You share in like places like your site. I also do link ups occasionally. Other places do link ups. So that's a place where you can sort of find a list of blogs, you know, that have people like yourself who like the same thing. So like the people on Leah's blog, on your blog, that share like your work. And so you can almost assume that you're going to really like to chat with those people because you have a common
interest. Everybody has a common interest. We talked a little bit, Lee, about like your own voice, because I'm not sure everybody would understand that. I think for those of us in business, we know that we sort of know what that means. But why don't you explain how you see writing in your own voice?
Well, you know, there's a generic way to write. Rather, you know, kind of if you're giving an instruction or a tutorial or something, it's going to be kind of mm-hmm. generic, you know, step one, step two, step three. If you're writing something more personal, like about a quilt that's about a specific subject, that's about something, you know, well, you're making a quilt for the grandbaby, you know, your daughter's having this child, you know, this is a nice moment in your life and making this for her, you know, you're imagining this great time with your grandbaby, all of those things that you can share and pull from your experience and put out there, that can be written, you know, essentially it's exactly the way you're thinking, and that's mm-hmm. your voice. And it's something that definitely develops. When I first started blogging, when I first started writing, you know, it's something that you get, it's a skill you gain, just like with quilting. At the beginning, you might find it a little bit difficult to kind of put your ideas, your emotions into words, mm-hmm. but the more you do it, the easier it's going to be to tap into that and to be able to kind of put all that together and do it in a way where it's very satisfying and it feels like you just sat down with someone face to face and had a wonderful cup of coffee with your girlfriend and, mm-hmm. you know, dished and just had a great chat. But you just type that and put that on a screen and given it away to everyone in the world. Now, does that sound scary? Some people get a little worried about just how open that is. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, my personal feeling is, you know, of course, don't put anything up there that you wouldn't want everyone to know, obviously.
Right.
But also openness, understand that openness is not a sin. It's not scary so long as you're willing, you know, you're tapping into that and willing to be open yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's talking out to a group, and it's more like it's like a public journal, but you can mm-hmm. certainly yeah. journal your thoughts. Like if you went to your guild meeting, your local guild meeting, you know, you might talk to a whole group of people there about the quilt that you were making and how important it was, or maybe what problem you had, and get advice. And I always see the blog as that, because not everybody can get to in-person communities mm-hmm. for many, many reasons. Either they don't have them, or their work schedules, or their life schedules. And so being able to write on your blog about your journey, your quilt journey, and share it personally really connects and builds you some fantastic friendships. I have some of the most amazing friendships from people that I've met through the years from writing online. It's just so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, looking at it, show and tell. This is show and tell online.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
You know, show and tell online.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I know.
There is, you know, one certain issue that I see that crops up occasionally is the whole idea of, you know, someone will steal my stuff. You know, someone will take this idea. You know, I came up with this idea or whatever. And the thing that you have to realize is if you've got a quilt design that is like yours and you don't want anyone else to have it, don't blog about it.
Right.
Just don't blog about it. And that's it. You know, that's as easy as it is. Mm-hmm. But any time that you kind of get that locked in mentality about what you're making, that does not belong online. And certainly that attitude, I can't stand it when I see it. It irritates me a lot because I everything I put up online, it's given for free. It's shared for free. Take it, mm-hmm. use it, do whatever you want with it. But, you know, don't try and put any rules and regulations on it, because you're going to get your toes stepped on and then you'll be irritated.
Yeah.
So give freely. That's the rule with blogging.
Now, can you give me like maybe three top things to think about to do a video, because it's so easy to do them with your phone now, you know, and little flip cameras, you know, different things, but we don't have a lot of time left. So what are some top tips?
Sure. I think some great ideas to do some videos on. If you're going to a local fabric store and it's, you know, like in your neck of the woods, but you know a lot of people like to travel there, you know, do a little review. Like, hey, I'm going into this fabric store. Let's check it out. You know, and I mean, of course, you know, if the store owner's not cool with it, that's one of those things you have to watch out for. But I think that would be a cool thing to blog about. sewing machine reviews. You've got a sewing machine. Chances are thousands of people have that sewing machine too. Do a little review about it. Be honest about it. What are the limitations? What are the good things about it? What do you love? What do you hate? Put that on YouTube, because chances are people are searching for that machine. Just a simple video on how to thread that machine that you own. You never know how many people are going to be searching for that information. And then if there's a tip or a technique that you know how to do, you know, grab your phone, shoot it real quick, even if it's just simply, hey, I'm making this and I made a mistake, and and here's how I fixed it. You know, people love that kind of thing. More than anything else, be real, be yourself. Don't be afraid of your mistakes, and don't be afraid of making mistakes on the camera. If you get all flustered and crazy every time you make a mistake, you're not going to make more videos. You just got to keep rolling.
Right. Keep rolling and make them short, 2 to 5 minutes.
Yes.
Just short.
Yes.
Yeah.
Honestly,
to
attention
the point.
Spans, like 2 minutes.
Yeah, right. 2 minutes. Go for 2 minutes. Yeah. And I think it's also fun just to share like your local quilt show, or if your sewing group is doing something and you can share with the people who couldn't make it to the group. You know, a lot of guilds have blogs now where they can put up things like that. So I think everybody should try it, right, Leah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Turn on the video camera and hit record, you know, just see what happens.
Hit record. You can also do, you know, on the phone, you can turn it on yourself, you know, so you don't, you can record yourself, or it's just a lot of fun. I should do more of them. It's on my big giant list, Leah, of things to do. So we are about out of time. I wanted people to see your site. You have a new site, leahday.com. You have a whole new look. It's very cool. Any one top thing you want people to check out when they go to your site?
Oh, just come on over and check out all of the hundreds of designs we have available for free. And if you need one, go on ahead and pick up a book or a DVD on Freemotion Quilting. I appreciate it.
There you go. There you go. Well, thanks, Leah. And we'll see you next month. It'll be our last one for the year to wrap up. We're going to do a Q&A. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I will be back next week with a new set of guests. And I want you to go out and visit American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com. And if you go to my event page, you can check out where I'm teaching or invite me to come and teach at one of your events, because I'd really love to see you and tell you all the behind the scenes of the American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's podcast show. So next week we will see you here on the radio, on the podcast. Oh, and don't forget, you can pick up all the past shows. You can load them to whatever player you have, and we'll talk to you then. This is Pat. Goodbye.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.